Check 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Check 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 1, 2. Poetry Center, December 11th, 2014.
Hi, everybody. Sorry, Don. Yes. There we go. Is this on? Yeah. Hello, I'm Danielle Susi. I am the curator and host of the 6 Points Reading Series. Thank you for joining the Poetry Center of Chicago at the historical, beautiful Chicago Cultural Center on this kind of chilly night. Not as bad as other days, I will take it. The Poetry Center was founded in 1973, and we're really excited to be celebrating our 40th year of programming and promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. We do this primarily through two different programs. The first is the Hands-on Stanzas program, where we put working Chicago poets in Chicago public schools to teach poetry to students. And the second program that we run is this great reading series, which is why you're all here, to hear great people read. We've developed this series, the 6 Points Reading Series, to showcase some of the most innovative and talented contemporary poets in Chicago and around the country. And tonight we're excited to hear from Tyler Mills, Larry Sawyer, and Lina Ramona Vitkauskas. Following the reading, Tyler's books will be available for purchase in the back. No, the woman says no. Okay, maybe talk to Tyler. Who knows? Perfect. Yes, we're getting an okay from there. So our first reader will be Tyler Mills. She's the author of Tongue Liar, winner of the 2011 Crab Orchard Series and Poetry First Book Award. Her poems have appeared in The Believer, Blackbird, The Boston Review, and Poetry Magazine. She is a PhD candidate in poetry at the University of Illinois Chicago, and editor-in-chief of The Account, a journal of poetry, prose, and thought. Please help. Please welcome Tyler Mills.
Hi, everyone. So wonderful to see you. Thank you so much, Danielle, for being such a gracious host. It's such a pleasure to read with Lina and Larry this evening. I'm very excited. I admire their work a lot. I'm going to read poems from Tongue Liar. And, you know, the word tongue is meant to invoke the myth of Philomela and also kind of language and its capacity for song. And then lyre kind of is where the word, you know, the lyric comes from, thinking about music and the stringed instrument of Orpheus. Tongue. The problem is not night, people gathering in booths, or a game where you select who to save from an apartment that's on fire. But at night, the silver bathroom stalls in the multiplex crack open as if I am the last horse to wander out during the credits. What I mean is my thighs sometimes still feel like the whites of a poached egg. There is logic to thinking about digger wasps, solitary insects that excavate nests from the soil and then straddle their prey, usually an August cricket, ashy as the blade of a waterlogged feather. And at night, the hermit thrush calls, flutters to a new tree, calls, and soon the grove hosts a quorum of these nightingale songs when there's only one traveling from tree to tree. To an oak like the one shading my porch, I go there at night to breathe. In the myth of Philomela, the king puts his knife down Philomela's throat after he finishes, then cuts her tongue out. Before she becomes a thrush, she weaves what happened, images in a bolt of cloth, a kind of flag. The newspaper pays for them, the flickering paper flags leaning on the bottom panel of the doors in the neighborhoods. Again, this year, before dawn, the truck door slammed. I heard someone cross the street. When I woke, flames were mouthing the air. This poem lesson is a reimagining of the story of Lot's wife. Lesson. Flames ice the grass. Nests of hornets murmur in the smoke. Clay steams. Horses snorting ash pass barebacked. It is not enough to want to leave. Consider the tapestry knotted near the hearth, the pots and pots of boiled lentils, all of the nights breathing in that one place, the dark room where dinner spices hang above the face, the way wind sucks in through an open window. Lot fed the visiting angels bread his wife flattened on a stone, palm on stone, as the men of the city circled. The men of the city want to fuck the angels. Screaming horses pass Lot's wife as she climbs the hill from the valley of the salt sea, the tents below lit up like blown glass. All those nights breathing in that one dark room, remembering, blood on the thighs, wet as tongue saliva, blood staining the skin, do not enter, do not enter. On the hill, Lot's wife heard her past self's hair catching fire in the city. This story is supposed to be a lesson, someone could remind me. You should not look for your past self naked, below, below. Go back. Get the woman out. The men want to fuck the angels. A sheep's on fire now, running. Turn back and get the woman out of the room. Another horse passes. Ash, the stairs must be ash now and empty. The snapping wood ribs of the room, the cellophane lens heat casts, the woman. There won't be any woman in the wrong bed. She'll get out so there won't be any woman on a hill. There won't be any city burning behind hot on the back of her thighs. The sweat. There won't be anyone. Turn back. Watch. This poem is a meditation on the myth of the Cyclops. Cyclops. All perspective is a dot. You can plan on any page and then draw solid cubes so a house can hover above crayon spikes of grass. I am afraid. I have seen sheep puff like dandelions, some spotting blue as though thumbs pushed ink on their backs. Farmers spray dye on the rams, so after rutting with ewes, the used ones are marked. The more a thing is investigated, the more it burns, light on paper. A museum displays these photographs, Paganini's ghost wearing a devil mask, pushing down on his violin, and others, a serious girl, hair parting her skull in half. People show others how no one is still there, turning a cold doorknob, and how the more a thing is probed, the more it burns. Oh, it burns. Performance. This bird is just imitating people imitating crows from Why Birds Sing. The story involves a whole village kept busy making earthenware jars while the hurricane 100 miles offshore kicks up the oily green ocean, and the only two people who won't escape are sweating in an abandoned stable the rain slashes. They are naked and touch the dirt floor with their fingers, thinking someone is about to pull open the door. Characters can't know the real crisis. Dorothy doesn't remember Lion being the farmhand who pulled her from the pig pen before she glittered the dead witch's shoes, glint, 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 back to where she began. But in real life, The cherry picker, parked across from the post office, extends its silver basket. The tiny human figure looks like he stands in a toothbrush cap up there, and he's reaching for the black seam dangling the stoplights when a car hits the truck and the crane swerves the man and he falls. He dies. What then? We can only control some stories. Babysitting, I would turn three pages at once during the fifth bedtime book until the girl sitting on my lap asked about the train and why this time the conductor didn't wait. I would be caught, like now, when I am nowhere, but pretending to be standing in the Pittsburgh aviary watching flamingos step through a pond, the white plastic pipes churning, bubbling the surface. One cartoon pink leg lifts a wet claw, dips it back, stepping into the ventilated wind with the others. Like plastic flamingo lawn ornaments, our friend staked in his grass and switched around at dusk. Sometimes three turning their backs to one, sometimes all seven forms seeming to proceed to the curb in the fog, as though the neighbors would have to consider the ornaments becoming birds and moving themselves. This is suggested plot, though, like when a child asks you to keep the bedroom door open after you tuck her in so you think the vertical strip of light can illuminate the bookcase next to her pillow, when she really wants the lion tucking his paws under his mane and guarding the foot of her bed to know he can exit by pushing his nose on the door. Now I am listening to a white-crested laughing thrush chortling up by the aviary skylights and a blue parrot muttering at the blank clouds, "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die," which could be a climax if there was a story, followed by a rainy walk to the car, the powder gray bats I've never seen here before, dipping from oak to oak as randomly as meteors. This poem, Violin Shop, is about a haunted violin from Chicago. Well, the story centered in Chicago. Violin Shop. Instruments hang from the ceiling, stiff necks, bodies burnished gold, curved like pheasants, mute swans, a rare condor, so valuable that symphony musicians borrow these forms only for specific concerts, such as Scheherazade, where a violin solo draws the hushed audience inside itself like rows of oars sliding on the flat deck of a Phoenician ship. In the shop, luthiers worry. They wipe varnish on their apron pockets. Glatz pots gleam yellow with boiled glue, and slips of tan horsehair fan the work tables. The silver tools, small enough to fit inside my mouth, cannot make Guarneri del Gesù speak. Rumors say the 300-year-old violin hid beneath the bed of a man in Spain while a bullet spat his wet blood, a clean red arc across the floor. Black F-slits angle in an antagonistic way, the violin mutters, complains under the chin of Berlin Philharmonic musicians. I read this in the Chicago Tribune. The shop owners stood over the wood instrument, praying for its voice. They brewed coffee, rubbed its body with swatches of velvet. Then they called a man, an exorcist, who probably laid the violin down on the stock market page as if it were a pumpkin, round, hairy inside with seed pulp, enchanted, hollowing out its cavity. The voice that laughed at Bach, grown through Tchaikovsky's concerto, that usually runs so fast trees blur, that spoke out loud longer than you or I ever will, and wanted to comment finally on how things really are, was cured. And this is the last poem I'm going to read tonight. Thank you to the Poetry Center of Chicago and to Danielle and for everybody for coming. This is an erasure of a section of Joyce's Ulysses. Ithaca. Ever you will wander, self-compelled, to the extreme limit of cometary orbit, beyond the fixed stars and variable suns and telescopic planets, astronomical waifs and strays, to the extreme boundary of space, passing from land to land, among peoples, amid events, somewhere imperceptibly hearing and somehow reluctantly, sun compelled, obey the summons of recall. Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler. That image of flamingos moving themselves is so great. I think it'd be a great prank to play on somebody, too. It's just me. All right, next up is Larry Sawyer. Larry Sawyer curates the Myopic Books Poetry Series and is the co-director of the Chicago School of Poetics. His books include Unable to Fully California, Vertigo Diary, and Breaking Lorca. His poetry and reviews have appeared in publications including the Chicago Tribune, just like that violin, Boston Review, Action Yes, Forklift Ohio, Vanitas, Skanky Possum, Court Green, Rain Taxi, and elsewhere. Please join me in welcoming Larry Sawyer.
Thanks so much for having me. I have to wear glasses now. Jeez. And these are my glasses. The cheapest frames were like $300 or something. I was like, oh my God. I'm glad it happened late in life. So I have not read these aloud. These are my exhibition poems. I left quite a few at home. This is called To the New Set. Painters would spend months trying to capture the exact light that would wrap anguish like a gift of days. But we who are twilight spend all of our time complaining about cheese and believing in arc theories in which to place all of our worries two by two. But we who are twilight spend all of our time mapping our frustrations, and our insides became dangerous and calm. We found a galaxy hidden in the couch with a few pennies and a potato chip. Once she realized this, each of his eyes blossomed, each new day a turgid flood. Two, somewhere a cave swallows a bat. Shame is the strangest garment. Love is tireless. Memory has a tail. It's your mysterious desert. It's no surprise that the splash of the present seduces. Inside my heart, there is the smell of smoke, the silhouette of a dog. A friend promises you that in heaven they perform a play called Childhood. That's the end of the first poem. This one's called Big Bang Theory. I crawl inside the night sky. Inside its tent, a heart pulsates. We were walking around the neighborhood. Leaves, sycamore and oak, were falling. Their violent orange and red were not enough to keep us from eating our own hands. It was thought that if we devoured our own hands, we would keep them to ourselves. We would digest fully our bad intentions, and these nutrients would make our bodies fit and strong. Two. Sex is a circus, and you are its acrobat. You envy the unicyclist, his self-reliance. Without arms, it's difficult to work. When I speak, there is a bouquet of flowers. No one appreciates me. Three. I'm tired of being asked to bring a dessert. Next time, I'll bring a troupe of mimes. They will enact the signing of a peace accord, whereby all nations must lay down their arms. In the silence that ensued, there could still be heard a swarm of bees. These were no ordinary bees. They were politicians dripping in filth. Three. Christ should acknowledge the havoc he has caused. For every convert, 100 mopes. Four. Days pass and you do not hear their machinations. So I've been rhyming a little bit. I visit the zoo and I write poems about animals, and eventually I'll have enough poems to put into a book, and the book will be called Bestiary, which is not very original, but this is a strange situation. So someone said, I will publish this, but now I have to finish it, which has never happened to me before, because usually I have something and I'm showing it to all these different people and they're like, eh, maybe, I don't know. So now I sort of have to fill this space, and I have to admit this is kind of like a better feeling. But I do feel like there's a deadline looming of some sort, even though there's really no genuine pressure to finish this thing. But I'm kind of having some fun with it. So these are three or four of the first ones I've written. But I actually visited the Brookfield Zoo a couple of times and took copious amounts of notes about these different animals. This one's about the giraffe. The accidental giraffe whose eyes, with telescopic neck bent slantwise, spot another continent from which springs a jungle doctorate of dark knowing. The mouth a hydraulic wonder, the legs a scaffold stretching, or else four tent pegs camped out on the surface of the sun. A cryptic creature, metaphysical as done. This quiet cadre of giraffes conspire to keep a secret they have set afire. During lunch, their tongues are spastic squids, redoing precisely what the tail end undid. Like a telegram, charmingly low-tech, the leggiest vixen on the sun deck. This one's about a chameleon, an actual chameleon that I saw. When a chameleon calls, honey is near. A question mark graces his derriere. Mists move silently atop the roof of the world. Chameleon is a glowing green flag unfurled. Lounging relaxed, he has seen it all before. Sands labyrinth, this tree-sized minotaur, kvetches to the Amazonian breeze. This bluesman is due back royalties. The day can be strange, depending on his mood. Once green, this freak's now vermilion-hued. One eye front and one rear view. Don't invite him to your next fondue. Leave him be, this lord of fly. It's witchy to watch him transmogrify. So I found out the word transmogrify was more or less invented by the guy who draws this Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, which is kind of odd because it just sounds like a word that's been around for a long time, but apparently not. And that's why poetry is so great, because I actually learned something in the writing of that poem. The Bali Mina is an iceberg of white. This sucker is all alone, hidden from sight. Through labyrinthine leaves, soft eyes beam. In your jungle chili, a dab of sour cream. When it comes to reconnaissance, this bird's an old hand. Those legs involuntary music stands. The most fetching wings let the world behold what nature can do when it aspires to more than slime mold. Thank you for the serendipitous tete-a-tete. We should have shared a cigarette. You could pass for a slumming billionaire. I'm gonna brutalize this French line here. Actually, that just rhymed. Wow, weird. Quand est-ce quote votre liberationnel conditionnel, mon cher? You are a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flickering lamp, a phantom in a dream. I should like my own poetry more, but I really can't. I keep doing it, though. Other people seem to occasionally like it. So. The African rock python is a terrestrial shark. You won't find him on any visit to Yellowstone National Park. What a fang denouement in which a predictable plot ties each victim with a Windsor knot. A filigree in the shadows, an expert at dissembling. For every good reason, his neighbors are trembling. Good luck if you happen upon this mottled tripwire. He's as bewitching as St. Anthony's fire. His method of digestion is disgusting, ergo. He prefers to be let alone like Garbo. Let me confess that we two must be twain. I'm not down with no snakes on my plane. This is au revoir, in case you misheard. I won't soon forget how you disposed of that bird. Thanks. And this is the book that I wrote of
Yeah, and I should remark that both Lynette and Larry's books are available on Amazon, as is Tyler's, I'm sure. If you maybe, probably, I bet it is. Or through her publisher.
Everything.
Everybody has work on Amazon, even if they don't know it. You can buy bald eagles on Amazon. You can buy a box of 24 rolls of toilet paper on Amazon, and it just comes to your house. I've never done it, but I've thought about it. Anyway, thank you. Thank you, Larry, very much. Our final reader for the night is Lina Ramona Vitkauskis. She is the author of Spiny Retinas, Professional Poetry, A Neon Tryst, Honey is a She, The Range of Your Amazing Nothing, Failed Star Spawns, Planet/Star, and Shooting Dead Films with Poets. Her bio was so lengthy I had to cut it down, which is like such a disservice to how incredibly talented she is. But you know, just for the sake of time here. Her work has appeared in Atticus Review, Spork, The All, Diagram, Tri-Quarterly, The Chicago Review, The Toronto Quarterly, The Prague Literary Review, and many others. Lina has been a faculty member and the marketing director at the Chicago School of Poetics, as well as the co-editor and designer of the 14-year-running online literary magazine, Milk Magazine. Please join me in welcoming Lina Ramona Vitkauskis.
Thanks again, everyone, for coming, and thank you, Danielle, and the Poetry Center of Chicago. Tonight, I want to read a few poems from my new manuscript that I've been working on. So these are brand new, and no one's heard them, so we shall see. The manuscript is called White Stockings. It's a tentative title, and it comes from... Well, the inspiration of the collection is what's going on here in Ukraine. And as a Lithuanian American, I'm very vested in what's going on over there because a lot of my relatives in Lithuania are very scared about Russia overreaching their power. That being said, I did some research about some of the past conflicts, one of which was the Chechen Wars, and found some interesting information about this mythical group of women called Biele Golgotki in Russian, and in English it's White Stockings, and supposedly it was a very tight-knit group of Baltic women who were snipers, who were taking a lot of these Russians out, guerrilla style. So that being said, I wanted to do a collection from the perspective of these women and started writing a series of poems. So we'll see how this goes. And I wrote a very lengthy introduction, which I'll spare you of for now. Lengthy. So each poem is titled after the name, like either a Latvian or Lithuanian or Estonian name of a woman. I haven't gone through the entire collection and assigned a woman to each poem yet. So some of them have names and some of them do not. This is called Dagnia, and that's Latvian. It's translated to new day. Evacuate your symbols from earth as if each were a sign or a herring. These tiny hollow mandibles bob to broth's surface. Strangle your resin spirits, the gift handles of hand mirrors. Choke them until revolution rips open the new day. We assassins of old ways, resuscitating ancestral arcs, erasing words, we were always never there. From the Western Hemisphere, it seems an ancient accident that I even knew you once. Family portraits, bassinets, this vulnerable trajectory, like being lost in flight, a passcode for our madness. Some wish universals could be a tangible mess, something to cling to in the lawn, post-party, pink crepe streamers like natal mist and gossamer trends this spring. This poem is called Ruta, and Ruta is a Lithuanian name, and traditionally brides wear Ruta. It's an herb, and it's sort of like juniper, I believe. Ruta. Lithe fair ghosts slide down the spine of a Baltic coast, a meeting arranged, blouses and blood types formed caves. The compass stuck by a toxic twig finger, the time it took to carve out miniature Lepine hearts into halves. They say that death is a pebble-filled Fabergé, a womb sealing of some life that happens next, but not to you. So this poem does not have a name yet. I just called it Resist or Collaborate. And there's a notation at the top of the poem. The world's largest living thing is a fungus. It lives in the Blue Mountains of Oregon. The Amarelia ostiae specimen, and I'm butchering that, takes up over 2,000 acres. Most Baltic peoples cannot resist wild mushrooms with rye bread and butter. It is a nourishing staple, a fulfilling meal from the forest, a reward for hunting and gathering them. One, we bulk mycelium hanging. This whole operation without basis. These smoky attendants attempt to translate us. You wear constrictors, opportunities, waste paper, wishbone, necklace. Two, stolen renewable networks, all this dead information. Liquid courage, gun metal dripped into tomorrow's petri dish. The columnist, noble and orphaned by obstructing facts. Three, dendroid soldier daughters, some snow-caked and blessed by all the priests as cats melt into cobblestone streets. Four, the copper of us, the cogs of kindling, we binary mechanics need to take shelter for the winter. Five, and this is Lithuanian. O tevukas girdimane, O grandfather, hear me. Chauffeur for the Austrian ambassador to Lietuva, you sought me pre-birth, found me beneath lapai shaltai, cold leaves. This is called Irena, Irene, or Range, I'm not sure yet. Alms from Alps, laps from smalls of backs to palms, open the scope, steps to scan, plasticize subjects, believe in our uniforms, the will to shut me off, to genetically block, to build the arms, to fight the men who put me here before this visual is inevitable. This position, this immovable, this cinema inevitable. How can I fall in love when you won't stand still? Regina or Regina. Nothing in the space seemed to expire. I was ready for you, disremembering mother tongue among the workers, within infrastructures, and at funerals. The best part of me, long legs, was my karstic lone soul. Rock salt fashioned around butter clavicles, I built nests around ports. Nothing I review recognizes my flush, this whole conversation in a knapsack. Find the undefined moment. The night of night's opening, dark and nautical, caustic and neurological, phases we go through for these inferior gods, how she observes the barren highway, violin bows of the 18th century, dug in the gravel, the netting of breast to soil, tumbled forward to radio frequencies, ancient peninsulas, graphic fossils arranged for still frame lens, the moment, the moment. or does it confirm their beliefs or thoughts? Do you believe she, do you believe she, do you believe she crashed into the mountain? She crashed into the crash site. She neither confirmed nor denied their suspicions. She found the letters. She knew the unsupported assertion. She found the lodestone. She loaded the weapon. She told you the etymology. She cracked herself in half. She accepted the next assignment. She broke all of her metatarsals. She gathered digital tinder like an elf. These poems are very heavy, so I need to be with them for a second. This will be the last poem I read. It's called The Swamps of Every Instant, and there's a notation at the top. In 1994, Ukraine gave up the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. In return, the US, the UK, and Russia guaranteed its sovereignty and protection by signing what was called the Budapest Memorandum. War, coercion, artifice, absurd, control, the necessity, it's a language barrier. No, niet, ne. Breach this, shoot this, kinship this, face this, place this, border this. In the swamps of every instant, a despot will perish. You crane, me crane, she crane. He crane, we all scream. Thank you.
Thank you, Lena, and thanks again to Tyler and Larry, and thank you all for coming. Our next reading is January 22nd, so this is our final reading of 2014. Don't be sad, it returns in January. And we are more than excited to welcome Russell Price and Valerie Wallace, who are really amazing poets, to that reading, and you can get more information by signing up for our newsletter in the back, or you can visit poetrycenter.org, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. Additionally, we can't run programs like this without donations, so if you or somebody you know wants to donate to the Poetry Center, you should do that, and you can do that by going to poetrycenter.org. Additionally, if you sign up for the newsletter, you can learn more about our many events or get more information about our different programs that we run. Thank you again, and have a good night.